Chapter 71. 9 million new Serbs. Serbia, which had been a center of intrigues before the war and had precipitated the war with the Sarajevo assassination, was now coming forward to claim its due. The Benes of Serbia was that old intriguer, Nikolas Pašić. Over the years he had been condemned to death or imprisonment, but had always been pardoned by sympathetic Serbian officials. Pašić had duplicated the Czechs' fraudulent Cleveland and Pittsburgh declarations on the Greek island of Corfu. There he had assembled a handful of Balkan individuals for the purpose of pressing Serbian claims to some 9 million non-Serbians. Serbia's population would then increase from 3 to 12 million people. Pašić's main targets were Slovenia, Dalmatia, and Croatia. A lone Croatian politician called Trumbic, who represented only himself, was presented as evidence of Croatia's desire to be absorbed by Serbia. Pašić's claim was patently absurd. The majority of Croatians were totally opposed to Serbian domination. For the last 2,000 years they had been part of the Western world, first Rome, then Venice and Austria-Hungary. They were totally different in culture and religion from the Serbs and always refused to have anything to do with them. Serbian expansionists had long coveted the Croatian Adriatic coastline with the dual aim of dominating Slovenia and Dalmatia and preventing Austria from access to the sea. The Allies had considerable financial stakes in the Balkans, from copper to oil, and there was a consensus that Pašić would be a reliable overlord. The British agent Seaton Watson produced the lone Croatian Trumbic and took him to meet Pašić in Corfu. Pašić promised special rights and privileges, autonomy, religious freedom and countless other benefits. These were exactly the same promises Masaryk had given to the Slovaks in 1915 and 1918, which resulted in the subjugation of the Slovak nation. Pašić had promised Trumbic a cabinet post as well as 1 million gold francs for himself. The bribe came from the vast loans made by corrupt French politicians to the corrupt politicians of Serbia. Pašić, who was an experienced liar, denied money had changed hands, but Trumbic, who felt his fellow Croatians would regard him as a traitor, admitted that the money had been offered, but claimed that he had declined it. The episode was Byzantine and full of side intrigues, with the end result that Trumbic's signature on Pašić's Greater Serbia plan was accepted by the Allies as proof that the Croatians wanted to be part of Serbia. Pašić also enlisted the services of an Italian negotiator, named Tori, an obscure politician from Rome. Tori accompanied Trumbic to London, somehow giving the impression he represented Italy. Tori and Trumbic did not in any way represent their countries, but the British agreed to Pašić's plan, which became known as the London Pact. The pair then proceeded to Rome, where Pašić had sent 24 Serbian front men masquerading as Slovenians, Croatians and Dalmatians. The group called themselves Yugoslav delegates and issued a declaration of union with Serbia. The delegates of the Slavic peoples who are still enslaved proclaimed their unanimous will to unite with the future Greater Serbia of all Yugoslavs, Southern Slavs. The statement from this fraudulent meeting was known as the Rome Declaration. No one had appointed the delegates, except a cabal of conniving Serbian politicians. Furthermore, the fake Croatians and Slovenians had joined their Serbian brethren in declaring as traitors all those who were trying to make Croatia and Slovenia and the Adriatic provinces independent states. The chief of the Serbian government press, a man called Maget, would publicly laugh at the event 2 months later. It was a farce, but it was a very well-rehearsed farce. The oppressed nations were represented in Rome by a few dozen Serbian emigrants who had been baptized Croats, Slovenes or Dalmatians for the occasion. Thus the spurious Pact of Corfu, Treaty of London and Rome Declaration had been arranged for the Allies even before the day of the armistice. With such overwhelming evidence, the Allies were not disposed to hear the protests of the 9 million people about to be subjected to Serbian tyranny. The lone Croatian who had sold out for 1 million francs was made a cabinet minister but for a short time only. He soon had outlived his usefulness and was thrown in jail and tortured. Before dying he belatedly appealed to his compatriots, "Let us never accept being Serbianized, to be beaten on the head like the Macedonians, or whipped on the back like our own women." Next, the Croatian leader Radic was assassinated on the floor of the Yugoslavian parliament on July 20, 1928. 1.5 million Croatians would be forced to flee their country in order to save their lives. 500,000 Macedonians had to flee as well. Pašić became president of Greater Serbia, the so-called Yugoslavia, and explained with truly contorted logic, "If there had been a plebiscite in Croatia and Slovenia, we would not have had a quarter of the votes." Pašić's observation became reality 15 years later, when the Croats were finally able to cast a vote in favor of their independence. 77% voted for independence despite an influx of Serbians into Croatia. The English reporters who witnessed the embarrassing election of May 15, 1935, and reported it thoroughly in the British press were expelled by the Yugoslavian secret police. The Yugoslavian army and police then went on a rampage of terror against all those who had voted so insultingly against Yugoslavia. The terror would provoke violent reactions among the refugees abroad. In 1934, Croatian freedom fighters would assassinate the King of Yugoslavia, Alexander, in Marseilles, France. It would be the same Serbian terror that in 1941 would induce Croatians to form three entire divisions, all of them volunteers, to join other Europeans on the Eastern Front. There they would fight the Soviet masters of the communist, Yugoslavian, imperialist, Tito. Like their Czech Masonic allies, the Serbian Masons were under the constant protection of French Masonic Grand Master André Tardieu. Wilson's principles had been circumvented at every turn by the Grand Orient Masonic Cabal. The American president realized there was nothing he could do except save appearances. "He was ready," commented an observer at the peace conference, "to take seriously the most extravagant documents as long as they were written in impeccable legal terminology." Tardieu had managed to chair most of the peace commissions and had placed fellow Masons in all of them. The Serbian delegate, Dr. Ivan Zalger, admired Tardieu's pro-Serbian bias. "M. Tardieu has occasionally changed the sense of decisions of the Supreme Council in our favor. He would do this quite arbitrarily, which often embroiled him in very bitter conflicts with the delegates of other nations." Slovenský Narod, June 2, 1921. It has been often asked how tens of millions of unwilling people could have been subjected to the will of their traditional enemies without the plebiscites which the victorious Allies had solemnly pledged to implement and respect as a condition of the armistice. The answer was to be found in the relentless Masonic efforts to impose Masonic regimes all over Europe by any means. The American delegate Bowman recorded some of these means. "Each Central European delegation brought a pile of cooked-up statistics and maps. If the statistics failed to convince, colored maps were produced. A thick volume would not be enough to analyze all the different types of these made-up maps. A good-looking map would save many a poor argument from sinking into oblivion. It is mainly in the Balkans that this practice reached its peak." What Happened in Versailles, page 126. Although Bowman was a noted geographer, Wilson chose to ignore his advice. It would take an additional 2 years for Lloyd George to make his displeasure at having been tricked by an avalanche of false maps publicly known. "All the documentation provided to us by certain of our allies during the peace negotiations was lies and deceptions. We have decided, the peace treaty, on a fraud." Lloyd George at Queen's Hall, 1921. Lloyd George's correct and belated realization did not, however, free the millions who had been subjected against their will. Among the hundreds of fraudulent practices, the case of the Hungarian town of Kassa, Košice, is quite illustrative. Benes had on February 5, 1919 claimed Kassa as a Czech city. The British demanded verification, and two investigators, Edward Karmason and Robert Kramer, were sent to check Benes's claim. Both were American citizens of Czech origins who had shortly before been naturalized. They were officially received by a Kassa Czech. For a week, the two Czech Americans were wined and dined and entertained at the Hotel Sok in Kassa. The trio never left the hotel and, without the slightest investigation, wrote a report concluding that Kassa was, as Benes claimed, a totally Czech city. Apparently the report must have impressed the British because the people of Kassa were refused a plebiscite and 100,000 Hungarians were immediately declared Czechs. Like Lloyd George, the famous French statesman Aristide Briand belatedly deplored the flagrant injustice. One only need to glance at a map to realize that the borders of Hungary were unjustly drawn. French Assembly, June 7, 1921. Even Clemenceau, who had ignored the self-determination of so many peoples, felt the dismemberment of Hungary was excessive. On April 25, 1920 he declared on the subject of Hungary, "We have done so many stupid things, maybe we can right one of them." Nothing would be righted, all the Slovaks, three-quarters of the Croatians, Dalmatians, Slovenians, two-thirds of the Hungarians, all the Germans of Posen, Danzig, Sudetenland and the Tyrol had lost their rights, their nationality and their freedom. Benes, who had wanted in 1916 to stretch Czechoslovakia all the way to the outskirts of Berlin, demanded in 1919 at a corridor cut in half what was left of Little Hungary in order to link up with his Serbian allies. The Czech state must comprise Bohemia, Moravia, Silesia, and Northern Hungary. A direct link must be established between the Czechs and the Serbs in order to fulfill their national aspirations and fraternal affinities. A corridor cutting Hungary in half will connect the two people. It will be constituted by the Hungarian districts of Pozsony, Sopron, Mosen and Vas, which will facilitate trade between industrial Bohemia and agricultural Serbia. Its military importance will be considerable. In case Hungary objected, Benes proposed to the Serbians a military action against Hungary to create the corridor by force. But Hungary had already lost 11 million of its people, of an original total of 18 million, when the Jewish communist dictator Béla Kun took control and quickly shackled what was left of the country. Austria-Hungary was no more. Vienna was like a head without a body. The Versailles Treaty had sanctioned the dismemberment of the highly civilized empire into two little states under alien control.